You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Friday to you. We appreciate you being with us today. Later on the show, we'll have Roddy Jones, the ESPN analyst who called Arkansas's game against Auburn last week, to get his thoughts on the Razorbacks as they get ready for Texas A&M this weekend. 2:30 kickoff on ESPN Saturday. The Razorbacks and the Aggies both 3-1 overall, 1-0 in the SEC. We'll talk a little bit about that game, but first we're going to go back to yesterday's podcast when we replayed what Hunter Yurecek had to say Wednesday over at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. Ethan and I both were there. And Ethan, there was a lot of talk, obviously, about NIL, and he seems like he feels pretty good about maybe the, you know, he made the comments the week before down at the Little Rock Touchdown Club about how there needs to be more of a grassroots effort for NIL, and you just get the sense in talking to him that he feels good about maybe some steps that they've been able to take in the last 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, that's the sense that I got as well. It seems like he's, you know, that's a bold thing to do, to put yourself out there like that at the Touchdown Club and just kind of call out. I mean, it's the same old message that I think people are getting, you know, sometimes tired of, but he keeps giving it, of like just being super, super transparent about the situation that they're in and their need for grassroots efforts. And I think that something happened at the Touchdown Club, just the way that there was discourse for a few days after that. I mean, there's still discourse going on about the NIL situation. It's like you got to keep beating at that door, I feel like, until it's heard. And it seems like it was heard, you know, not like by the masses, at least after the Touchdown Club, but they've gotten some, I think, a few hundred new edge.
Yeah, somewhere in a few hundred, whatever that means. But yeah, that's what we've been told.
But I mean, in 1 week, 1 week's amount of time, like that's really positive.
Well, especially when you only had 1,000 before that. I mean, that's like a 33%. Let's say it's 300 new members. That's a 33% increase, basically, over what you had before he went down to Little Rock.
Exactly, and I think that that's, you're going to keep seeing him be very transparent about the situation that Arkansas is in and saying, this is what we got to do if you want to climb out of the, you know, I don't know where they rank in the SEC, but it seems like there's some sort of upper echelon that they just can't figure out how to break through and get into until this grassroots effort takes hold.
I asked Hunter last year when he was at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club about, you know, where does Arkansas rank in NIL? And there's really no ranking, and he kind of said that. He said, but there's usually a pretty good correlation between an athletic program's revenue and their NIL. And so Arkansas in revenue, I think they were 11th before Texas and OU came in. I think they would be 13th now after Texas and OU comes in. Texas, obviously one of the biggest budgets in college athletics, if not the biggest. So, they're somewhere down below. One of the things that we talked to him about was the fact that now with Edge, there's this $10 threshold that you can get in to donate to Edge. And I think that that is probably going to help them with some households who say, $25, I don't know that I want to do that. $10, yeah, I might do that. You know what I mean? I feel like if you can give people a low amount to get in on, if they, you know, and they can kind of see what the benefits are from that, then, you know, maybe they stay at that rate forever. Maybe they stair step their way up to something. But giving them a low introductory point in which to help your program, I think, is a good deal. It's election season. You can donate $5, $1 to some campaigns. They'll take whatever it is that you've got. I think this is kind of the same thing. Give us what you can afford to give us, but you know, don't start at $25. You need to give people an option to go lower. So I think that's a good sign for them. But like I said, they seem like they feel pretty good, they feel better about where they are with name, image, and likeness. And he made the point that this is something that you have to go out and you have to fundraise for continually. This is not like fundraising for a Bud Walton Arena renovation, for instance, which we'll talk about in just a second. It's not like fundraising for the Razorback Stadium north end zone enclosure, where you know you hit a certain rate and you've raised the money, the funds that you were going to, you know, you were going out and trying to hit that number. This never ends, and the cost of business is only going to continue to go up for these athletes.
Yeah, and you think about it, with the nature of NIL, a lot of times athletes are given, you know, this is the dollar amount. With now that we have these collectives, of what you're going to get to play here. And if it's, you know, a grassroots effort like this, you got to bank on retaining. You know, I think of there's the whole leaky bucket, you know, analogy that is used in a lot of business classes. It's a lot harder to plug holes coming out than you just fill it up I'm getting this all mixed up, but the leaky bucket is basically, it's hard to plug those holes when they're coming out. It's hard to retain. It's easier to get it in the first place in the bucket. So I think that the Razorbacks, that's what they're going to face, is you're going to face a lot of donors who might, you know, what happens whenever you were giving $25 a month and the football team goes 6-6 and that's not what this fan likes. It's going to be a matter of just trying to retain what you have. And it's funny all this even exists in the first place, while Hunter's telling us like he hates collectives, that they exist. It's just you have to play the game right now. And Arkansas is trying to do what it can do with the grassroots effort for NIL with the collectives. But it's something that he would have no problem seeing go away altogether.
I like the honesty whenever I ask him, did the collectives take you by surprise? Were you behind other programs and getting a collective off the ground? He said, yeah, they took us by surprise. I don't think they saw the collectives forming the way that they ended up doing and really becoming the basis for what NIL is right now. We talked to him about War Memorial Stadium in Little Rock, and he didn't come out and say they're never going to play at Little Rock again. I don't want people to think that. But the tone that I took from him really makes me think that these Little Rock games – maybe they don't go away forever, but certainly I don't think they're going to be as frequent as they have been. I mean, this was his quote. He mentioned that Arkansas has gone 2 years where they didn't play a game at War Memorial in 2020 and in 2022. He said, in quote, "and nothing detrimental happened to people in Little Rock. It's been a great place to play games, but the winds of college football are changing. Just like we talked about the Southwest Classic going away, we may go to a 9-game SEC schedule, may stay with an 8-game schedule." He said, "and so as football continues to evolve and change, we'll continue to need to evolve and change in the program, and that may include what we do at War Memorial Stadium." I reminded him that he had made some comments to the Board of Trustees last month in which he said that he's got to find new levers to increase revenue and decrease expenses. And I asked if War Memorial Stadium might fit into that consideration, because obviously Arkansas doesn't make as much money for games at War Memorial Stadium. There's also some expenses that are involved in playing games there due to the travel down to Little Rock. And he said, absolutely, if we had a sold-out game at War Memorial Stadium and a sold-out game here in Fayetteville, there's a 7-figure difference in what that revenue is. He didn't say how much, you know, like how many millions of dollars. But in 2017, before one of the last rounds of negotiations between the Razorbacks and the War Memorial Stadium Commission, the trustees were given a presentation in which they were told that Little Rock games at that point in time were worth about $3.7 million in average revenue. Fayetteville games at that time were worth around $7.4 million in average revenue. And that was before the enclosure of the north end zone at Razorback Stadium, which was projected to take the on-campus game day revenue to around $8.4 million. So assuming those numbers are anywhere near that in this day and age, and it wouldn't be surprising to me if it was actually a little bit greater, because the number of premium seats that you can sell in Fayetteville, and those typically get sold, number of suites, obviously. I think their suites are sold out this year. And the Little Rock attendance has just continued to dwindle over the last few years. Wouldn't surprise me if it's even bigger than that $4.7 million gap that we reported on those years ago. War Memorial, it just seems like the winds of change have come, and that game's going to go away after they play Arkansas State next year. Again, maybe not every year, but most years.
Yeah, and I think that you nailed it with you said it's all about tone right now. I feel like even since before the Week 1 game for Arkansas this year, in War Memorial Stadium, like even Sam Pittman, his tone was different. It was different. Yeah. You're just sensing, I think you're sensing the exhaustion from department-wide of having that game in Little Rock, because it affects everything. It affects the budget. It affects the football team having only one game in Fayetteville before, you know, October. It affects all these smaller sports bringing in recruits, for home football weekends, because that's what you're competing against in recruiting, is these other schools bringing them in for home football games. I just sense like a fatigue, if that makes sense, from all the from Hunter, from Sam Pittman, from coaches around campus, just with these Little Rock games taking away from what could be played in Fayetteville.
You can go read what we've written on this. There's a couple of stories on our website. One says Arkansas AD Hunter Yurecek discusses Bud Walton renovations, War Memorial future, and more in Springdale. Another, Hunter Yurecek doesn't dodge questions at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. I do want to touch real quick, though, before we move on to A&M discussion, what he had to say about Bud Walton Arena, because it felt 9 to 12 months ago that the Bud Walton Arena renovation was imminent and that it was right around the corner, maybe starting even as soon as after this upcoming season. I think that the brakes have really been tapped for the time being. I think NIL has a lot to do with this. The revenue share piece has a lot to do with this. You know, there's just so many unknowns about what the financial situation is going to look like at Arkansas and every other athletic program this time next year. And so Bud Walton Arena, the plans are still in place to renovate the arena, but Yurecek, I think his quote was, it's not as imminent as it was. What did he say? He said, we're not putting it on the back burner. We're going to put it on the side burner.
Yeah, it's not. They're not just like saying, you know, we're not going to do this. That's not what they're saying at all. It's just, I think with the nature of everything else going on with their budget between this revenue sharing that's about to come very, very real. It already is real. Just these lawsuits and everything going on. It's just the project like this that's multi-million dollar. It seems like, yeah, just on the side burner. But I think it is important that he did say that there's, like, deferred maintenance costs at Bud Walton Arena, like with just, like, the court, the original playing surface, HVAC, plumbing.
The roof.
The roof. There's a lot of things that do need done, and they can't just put that. I mean, it's right now on the side burner, I guess, for what he said, but it has to happen within the next 3 to 5 years.
And Bud Walton, not the only postponed renovation on campus right now. You've got Razorback Field, the soccer team. The plan long-term is to build them some new areas that would help the team development at that facility. Also, some renovations planned for Bogle Park, the Razorback softball stadium. But Bud Walton Arena, I will say this too, real quick. One of the things that I think affects the Bud Walton piece is that they have not sold naming rights to the football stadium. And the plan is to take that money that they get from the football stadium naming rights, the Reynolds Foundation. If you don't know, the Reynolds Foundation naming rights expired in June, on June 30th. And so even though the stadium is still being called Reynolds Razorback Stadium, they are shopping naming rights for that stadium. In the past, they've said somewhere between $3.5 to $4 million for corporations per year, a higher rate if an individual donor wants to come in, you know, like Westerman Razorback Stadium. You're going to give $5 million to the cause?
Absolutely not.
But, you know, like if an individual wants to come in, it would be a little bit of a higher rate. And the money that they're able to take from the Razorback Stadium naming rights is going to be put toward the Bud Walton Arena renovations. All right. Real quick on Arkansas A&M, we'll talk a little bit more about this game a little bit later. What stands out to you about this matchup?
There's a lot of things to do. I think, first of all, the quarterback situation. It's like Arkansas has a starting quarterback that's been its starting quarterback. He's going to remain the starting quarterback, but he's just a roller coaster ride. So you just, it's, I think this is what we're going to say every single week of the season, that Taylen Green is quarterback until he shows something different. It's like, which version are you going to get? You know, I think in a lot of games we've seen you get one version in the first half, another in the second half, and it's like, are you going to see a complete Taylen Green game? And then but on the other side, A&M has Marcel Reed and Connor Wegman, who Wegman's going to be a game-time decision. I wouldn't expect – I mean, this is just all speculation, but even if he is, you know, ready to go, could play, I don't think they'd go away from Marcel Reed with the way that Reed has performed. He's the first A&M quarterback since Johnny Manziel to have in back-to-back games two passing touchdowns, one rushing touchdown. I think he's doing some stuff there that they might like better than what they saw from Wegman whenever Wegman wasn't hurt. So that's like the obvious thing I think that stands out, is just which quarterback play will be better. It feels very similar to the Auburn game that we just went through. It's weird how many similarities there are. Another thing that stands out is A&M's on their third string center. Starter got hurt against Notre Dame, out for the year. backup got hurt against Bowling Green, and he's not going to be available. So that's something to watch for, because what happens, I mean, already you're on your third string center. What happens if something happens to him? Center is one of those positions that I think is critical. Just with, it's really obvious when you aren't getting good center play because bad snaps, etc. So those are a couple things right off the bat that stand out.
We'll talk more A&M Arkansas here coming up in just a little bit. But first, we're going to turn to Roddy Jones, the ESPN analyst who called Arkansas and Auburn. We'll get his thoughts on tomorrow's game in just a moment. But first, a word from our sponsors.
LPGA Week in Northwest Arkansas returns September 23rd through the 29th for the 18th consecutive year. Watch former Razorbacks and 2024 Olympians Maria Fassi and Gabby Lopez compete against the world's best female golfers at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship, presented by P&G at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers. The NWA Championship is so much more than a golf tournament, with something for everyone to enjoy and activities for fans of all ages. Daily tickets are only $10, and kids 17 and under get in free with a ticketed adult. Get your tickets today at nwachampionship.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. They're located up in Uptown Rogers. The staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. We're joined now by Roddy Jones, ESPN analyst. He was on the call for Arkansas-Auburn last weekend down on the plains when the Razorbacks defeated the Tigers 24-14. Roddy, we appreciate you being with us today.
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me. I appreciate you guys being flexible. I know we went back and forth on time a little bit. Thanks for doing that.
No, we appreciate your time. Hey, first off, I'm going to ask you plenty about the game, but there's been a little bit of back and forth since the game ended with Hugh Freeze's comments that he thought the Tigers would beat the Razorbacks 9 out of 9 times if they played again. I don't know what game he was watching, because I never felt a time Saturday where it looked like Auburn was just totally dominating Arkansas. It felt like a very evenly matched game, and every time Auburn scored, the Razorbacks responded with the score. And I wonder, when you hear those comments, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was funny. I don't agree. I don't agree that Auburn would beat Arkansas 9 times out of 9 if they played again. I also feel like it was a fairly even matched game. I can understand where he's coming from. Like, hey, if we don't turn the ball over 5 times, we're in a better game. But like, also, you know, if Arkansas doesn't turn the ball over 2 times, then it's a different game too. Yeah. So I understand what he's saying. And the other part of it, man, is Arkansas created at least 3 of those turnovers. I mean, the one overthrow, okay, I can understand. If you have a different quarterback in, maybe that doesn't happen. There's a decision on the first interception where maybe it's not made, but that's kind of a read that was a borderline read. So, you know, out of 10 times, that guy probably makes that read 5 times, and it was a great play by the defender. And then the fumble going into the end zone, that's an effort play and a strip by Arkansas. So I think it's a coach that's really frustrated in Hugh Freeze. I think that he looks at a game, 2 games this year, where they have been significantly negative in the turnover margin. They turned the ball over. They hit 4 interceptions against Cal as well. Mm-hmm. One of them was sort of at the end, but during crunch time, you know, you had 3 interceptions and you're minus in the turnover margin then too. So I think you're looking at 2 close games where you've turned the ball over a ton and thinking, man, if we just don't turn the ball over, it's a different ball game. And while I agree with that, they didn't dominate Arkansas by any means. Like, those two teams, you could probably play it 10 times. And I think it's 5-5 with or without the turnovers. So the thing is, though, Arkansas won the one that they play this year. So That's right. Doesn't matter.
Well, you know, Auburn, they were a 5-6 point underdog last year coming into Fayetteville, and they won that game by 38, and they could have won it by 60. If they wanted to. It's all about what you do on that one day. I want to get your analysis on Talen Green. What have you seen from him this year, both leading into last week, and what did you see with your own eyes in person?
Yeah, I see a guy that is, I think he's lost his confidence a little bit throwing the football. I think that UAB game, sort of got in his head. And while he started the Auburn game well, obviously there's that stretch in the middle where he really struggled. Ends the game having been benched right before halftime, or maybe it was right after halftime. I can't remember, for Malachi Singleton, just to give him a breather. So I see a guy that is incredibly physically talented. But with the change in throwing motion that Bobby Petrino is going through, I think you're seeing him grow from a comfort standpoint with that. And especially as he's had some struggles, as quarterbacks do. But when you're used to a throwing motion and you're not thinking about it, and you go through those struggles, you're like, okay, the next one will go. When you're trying to think about every little thing that you're doing when you're throwing the football, that can make it tougher. And I don't know that he is or he isn't. But I feel like that could be a tribute to some of the stuff that's going on with the pass game. I do feel like his athleticism and his ability in the run game has been invaluable. And I feel like there's so much more that this Arkansas offense can grow with if they are, one, able to keep him upright. DJ Durkin decided to heat up the pocket a lot with him. And so that, especially early, that first drive was a really high effort drive for him. Mm-hmm. And then they mixed stuff up from there on out. But two, if he can become more consistent throwing the football and can consistently deliver that sort of intermediate range, because there were some times where it felt like he was a little slow seeing something. And to be honest, he had three times where he got his receivers absolutely blasted, mm-hmm. which will be a learning lesson for him going forward.
Arkansas's offensive line in the run game, they're blowing teams off the line of scrimmage. And I mean, they're the best run game in the SEC right now. In the pass game, it's a different story. Kind of, I know you didn't play offensive line, but kind of take us into the offensive room and explain to us, why is it that a line can look so good in one element of its play, but so pedestrian in the other?
Yeah, I think it comes down to what those guys are good at. The offensive lineman that Arkansas has, the ones that they brought in, with the exception of Keyshawn Blackstock. Oh, Addison Nichols came from Tennessee too. So let me not say that, but. I think that some of those guys just struggle with quickness and potentially length in the pass game. There's also a lot of communication that has to happen that's sort of unwritten in the pass game. Eyes have to be in the same place, passing off twists and stunts, seeing blitzers come from depth. All of those things have to happen at the same time. And they happen so quickly that you don't have the time necessary to really, talk about it. You can't communicate in play to a center that a guy is twisting. You have to see it, feel it as those things are happening. So that I think is some of the stuff that's going on. And in the run game, I think they're good run blockers. Like their leverage is really good. The double teams fit together. They're able to work up to second level defenders. And so it's sort of a different skill set than when you're retreating, you're having to diagnose and see. Run blocking is much more aggressive. Pass blocking, while it's not passive, you are having to catch and pass and move and react a little bit more than you are in the run game. So I think it comes down to skill set. Like these guys are very good as run blockers. From a skill set standpoint, they're just not there yet in the pass game. But I think they're good enough. Like they're good enough to have Talen Green, give Talen Green enough time, and they're good enough to not all get beat at the same time. I say it all the time in pass pro, like, you can afford one guy getting beat. What you can't afford is three guys getting beat, especially when you have a mobile quarterback, because one guy can move, the quarterback can move and make you right. Three guys, you got no shot.
As a quarterback, is it easier to see downfield when you get outside the pocket? Because it looks to me like Talen Green right now, he's seeing the field a lot better whenever he's on those rollouts to either direction. I thought the most impressive throw I've ever seen him make was the touchdown pass to Satania.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. Like, you don't have the lineman in the way. Talen Green's a tall guy, 6'6". I think sometimes when you don't necessarily have comfort in your offensive line, or something that the defense has done has caused you discomfort, your eyes can come down to the pass rush a little bit. Like, you can drop back to pass, see a little bit of color, eyes come down, then you're looking up and you're trying to figure out, all right, what did I miss upfield? That's something that could be happening when he's in the pocket. And then when you get outside the pocket, you really don't have to worry about it. It also simplifies from a coverage standpoint. Once you get outside the pocket, you're not necessarily having to diagnose where the safety is. You're just looking for space. Like, you're just looking to see, do I have a guy that's open in a place that I can throw it? not necessarily, all right, where's the underneath defender? Where's the over-the-top defender? Where's the run support coming from? Where's the coverage? So it all kind of simplifies when you get outside the pocket as well. So I think that has to do with it. I agree with you. Like, it does feel like he's more comfortable out there. He's even had some where he's thrown back to Andrew Armstrong, kind of back over the middle, which, you know, we say late and over the middle is not what you want to do, but he's done it. He's done it smartly. So he's gotten away with it a lot. But I do agree with you that I think there may be a calming of the quarterback's nerves when you're outside the pocket, because you're not having to worry about the pass rush, the structure of the coverage and all that stuff. It's much more backyard football.
Do you believe in an announcer jinx?
I do. I'm a strong believer in that. Dwight, did we have one?
I think you had. Well, maybe a little bit. I think you and Mark had a little bit of a back and forth the other day. He asked you what grade you would have given Auburn's offense at the point.
Yes,
I think
did.
You said,
yes, we did.
B minus, and then Hank Brown throws a pick, and then you say, well, maybe you drop that down to a D minus.
Yes. Yeah. That. You know what? I take that. That's on me. I do believe in that. And it's funny because he threw another interception a little bit later on. And our producer was like, well, what grade do you give him now? And I think Mark was going to go there, or maybe we did go there, because he eventually got downgraded to an F. Like, you can't throw three picks in the game. That was, yes, I do believe in it. I believe in it more in baseball, to be honest with you. And I do some baseball too. Mm-hmm. It happens more often in baseball where you're like, guy hasn't struck out in 37 at bats, strike three. And you're like, oh, okay, that's on me. Sorry.
There's a lot more in baseball, a lot more stats you can hone in and drill down on. What did you think of T.J. Metcalf's play the other day? Because I'll tell you what it reminded me of. It reminded me of like one of those old Alabama safeties where felt like every play, they're right there in the middle of it. They're tipping a pass. They're making a pick. They're forcing a fumble. They're making a tackle. I thought it was one of the most impressive games I've seen by an Arkansas safety in quite some time.
He was tremendous. You mentioned the tip pass and the first pick. It was a great play because he lets the first guy go. He passes him off to the safety, turns around, gets his eyes to the quarterback, tips the ball up for Danico Slaughter to get the interception. And then the two that he had later on, he was all over the place, man. And I think both of Arkansas safeties, like, that's a real strength of this team, with Jaden Johnson on the other side, who had the incredible who had a great game the week before with 10 tackles. And when you get Jalen Braxton back, like, I think the secondary could really be a strength for Arkansas. The defense is as a whole, the defensive line has been really good. And the secondary is really developing with the play of T.J. Metcalf in the game. Jaden Johnson's been solid. Danico Slaughter had a tough week a couple weeks ago, but rebounds and that one with a pick. And again, Jalen Braxton is probably the best cover guy. At least that's what T-Will told us. Like, hey, this guy is our best guy in man-to-man. You get him back. Now you've got a ton of really talented players and some experience back there as well. But yeah, I was really impressed with T.J. Metcalf in that game. He played his heart out.
There was a lot of focus last week on Bobby Petrino's offense going against D.J. Durkin's defense. I think it's intriguing this week with Petrino facing A&M, where he coached last year, but then going against Mike Elko's defense. And I know, you know, you and I were talking a little bit earlier that you do so much ACC work that you've seen Elko in the past in some of those ACC games. What kind of challenge do you think that his defense brings this week? And as you look at, you know, his defensive style versus Petrino's offense, how do you see that matchup?
Yeah, his defenses are always really sound, and they challenge you. And those are the biggest two things. And that defensive line for A&M is really, really good. And I think that's what will help Bobby Petrino the most, is knowing the personnel on the other side. The scheme is a scheme, and you can learn anybody's scheme. You sort of get to know the play calling style of the opposing play caller. Although Jay Bateman, I believe, calls the plays for them defensively. Mike Elko didn't do it at Duke.
Right.
He's not doing it at A&M. Jay Bateman's a guy who was at UNC. He was at Army. And then most recently was a defensive, was a linebackers coach at Florida. So there's, I think that's going to take some getting used to. It's Mike Elko's structure. It's his style of defense, which is similar to Jay Bateman's, but it's Jay Bateman's play calling. So the biggest advantage that he's going to have is knowing the personnel, knowing about the defensive tackles and the defensive ends, knowing about the linebackers and Torian York and what he likes and doesn't like. What can we do to sort of work towards his weaknesses? So that part of it is super fascinating to me. The thing is, Bobby Petrino always does a great job designing up the run game, and so that's what I would look at the most, is how does he design the run game to try and have some of those defensive ends and tackles confused. Do you Do you run some zone read when you're reading the two Shamars up front and deciding not to block one of them on any particular play at defensive tackle or defensive end? They did some of that last week against Auburn, running midline read option, running the traditional read option. Midline, you'd read the defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. Traditional option, you're obviously reading the defensive end, the zone read. So they've mixed it up that way. And I would expect them to do some of that as well. But the ability for him to sort of know how to play to the defensive player's weaknesses, I think, is probably the biggest advantage going into the week.
You saw Marcel Reed when he came off the bowl game last year. Had the Texas Bowl. We don't know who we're going to see on Saturday. It wouldn't surprise me if we saw both of A&M's quarterbacks, if Connor Wegman's healthy enough to play. But Reed in particular, what did you see from him last year in the bowl game, and what makes him dangerous?
Yeah, he was – so it was sort of unexpected. Like, Jalen Henderson started the game and then broke his arm on the first play of the game. Mm-hmm. And then Marcel Reed came in. The thing is, he's a really quick twitch player. So, you know, you have fast guys, you have twitchy guys. He's a twitchy guy, like moves quickly. He's got a live arm. He sort of reminded me from his high school film of Randall Cunningham a little bit, the way he looked, like square shoulders, sort of a slender body. Mm-hmm. But a really good runner, and again, a really twitchy guy. So he's able to escape quickly and get out and scramble. But a lot of success in his high school career. And I think you saw, like, he went into Florida and won. And I don't care what you think about the University of Florida this year. Like, that is an environment that is tough. It's a tough place to play, no matter who's on the other side. So I think his ability to scramble, his ability to escape, and also the ability or the fact that he's already won a game on the road certainly helps his confidence going forward. But he's a very talented player. And I would be very curious on what the plan is if Connor Wegman is able to play. Like, mm-hmm. Do you put him in a situation where, you know, if they do some quarterback run stuff where Marshall Reed comes in the game? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they go with.
Roddy, let's get you out of here on this. You're an ACC guy. I think you got Stanford, Clemson this weekend. How weird does it feel to see Stanford and Clemson as a conference game?
It's a classic ACC matchup. I don't know what you're talking about.
The All-Coast Conference, right?
It's a week after the Battle of the Block S, Stanford at Syracuse. It's weird, man. It's weird. It was right before I came on, I was doing an interview with the Clemson radio show, and, mm-hmm. and they were saying, hey, look, we've got Stanford on the schedule, and Georgia Tech is off the schedule. And I went to Georgia Tech. Clemson, Georgia Tech have played every year since like the beginning of the ACC, mm-hmm. and they're not playing this year. It's the new world we're in. You know, it's weird, and I like making fun of it. It's sad in a lot of ways, but this is the way college athletics is going. So there's no reason to sit around and sort of whine about it. It just is what it is. But Stanford's got a young team. It's coming off a win, super competitive. Clemson's one of the best teams in the country, so it'll be a fun game.
Yeah, I was impressed watching Clemson a little bit last week, and I think you'll enjoy watching them in person. Good luck this weekend on your call, and we appreciate you taking time to be with us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me.
All right, thank you. Roddy Jones of ESPN. When we come back, we'll continue our look at Arkansas A&M, and we'll make our weekend predictions. But first, another word from our sponsors.
Taste, sip, sample, and discover the very best restaurants and chefs Northwest Arkansas has to offer at the Bite Experience at the LPGA. A unique culinary experience on site at the Northwest Arkansas Championship. Tickets are available Friday, September 27th through Sunday, September 29th, offering access to the best golf viewing and food and beverage samples from over 30 local restaurants. You don't want to miss this. Tickets are available for $45 a day. Get yours before they sell out at BiteNWA.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
We want to tell you about our friends over at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. This weekend's the last time that Arkansas and Texas A&M are going to get together in Arlington, Texas. The series began in 2009 as a non-conference game. It was going to be played for 10 years between an SEC team and a Big 12 team. And then the week before their game in 2011, Texas A&M and Missouri joined the SEC. I remember it very well. Arkansas was down by 18 against A&M down in Arlington that year. Tyler Wilson and Jarius Wright had a phenomenal game toward the end. Broderick Green ran for a go-ahead touchdown late. Dede Jones had a big stop defensively at the end of the game that helped Arkansas win that one 42-38. And when the game ended, you can guess what you heard. You heard the SEC chant from the Razorback fans over toward the Aggies. Series went on a two-year hiatus, came back to Arlington in 2014 after a couple of years where the games were played on campus. And when it came back in 2014, they actually renewed the series. They had a whole new contract written up. The old 10-year contract was gone. They had an 11-year contract put together that had this game in Arlington from 2014 until this year. And, Ethan, it's always been played with an expiration date. You think about the games between OU Texas at the State Fair in Dallas or the game between Florida Georgia at the in Jacksonville. Those games, they were started so long ago, and they have become such a part of the tradition of being a fan of those teams, and there's never really been an expiration date on the games. I'm sure that there's contracts in place for those games, just like there is for the Southwest Classic. But this one, I feel like it started in a day and age where it was never really able to get a foothold like those other two have been able to do.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that, I mean, it's all a matter of Texas A&M joined the SEC, and it's hard to go every other year having only three home games on your campus because of this game in Arlington. I think it'd be cool if they found some opponent from the Big 12 now who wanted to go do something like this in the future, but are you going to ever have a game in there again anytime soon?
I don't think you are, because, you know, I've heard people make a comment before that, you know, I wish Arkansas would play Oklahoma State every year down in Arlington. And my response is, if that happens, you're going to hear the same complaints. The people who are season ticket holders in Stillwater or the season ticket holders in Fayetteville are going to say, well, why are we having to go to Dallas to watch one of the marquee games of the year? Why can't we have that one on campus? And that's really what's been at the crux of the complaints about the Southwest Classic, is that after the last contract was signed, A&M did a $400 million renovation to Kyle Field. Arkansas did a $160 million renovation to Razorback Stadium. So you're building these grand on-campus stadiums, and then you're shopping out one of your really marquee matchups that you could have there every other year. And I just don't see the neutral site thing really ever coming back. Maybe it does. You know, what's old is new again a lot of times. But I don't see any time in the near future where teams are going to be lining up to be playing on neutral site games every single season. Even Nick Saban at Alabama, there were years where, you know, they started out every year. They were playing in Houston, or they were playing in Arlington, or they were playing in Atlanta, or they were playing in Charlotte. And even toward the end, you know, they got away from the neutral site thing. I just don't know that I see that really coming back on a real long-term scale.
I don't know if I see it year by year, like every single year playing a neutral site game, but I do think it would be cool if every, I don't know, 3 years you have some neutral site game that brings your brand into a big market for recruiting, or into a big alumni base like a Dallas or like a Houston or like a, I don't know, even New Orleans. Just find, I think every 3 years or so, I think where you get in trouble is whenever it's every single year and you're running into the problem. I think that if you do it every so often, it can be a benefit.
Here's the thought, because I don't know if the Southwest Classic, the name, the Southwest Classic, or the Southwest Classic Trophy are going to stick for the Arkansas A&M series. I've always been under the impression that the Southwest Classic is the game at AT&T Stadium, not the Arkansas A&M matchup. And when it went to campus in 12 and 13 and again in 20 for the pandemic, I don't think they played for the trophy. That trophy was created by the Jones family and has been presented at the stadium after the games in Arlington. So I wonder what's going to happen with the trophy. I say all of that to set this up. I wonder if the Southwest Classic could become something where, like you said, every 3, 4, 5 years maybe, Arkansas goes down to Arlington and plays an old Southwest Conference team that's not Texas or Texas A&M. Maybe they play a Baylor there. Maybe they play a Texas Tech there. Maybe a Houston. Maybe a TCU. Would that be appealing? I don't know. But it's always just kind of been in the back of my mind. Is that something that may happen?
Yeah, and you just wonder, because, I mean, it's a trophy, like you said, created by the Joneses, that, you know, such strong Arkansas ties. I'm like, what if every year there was a game in that stadium that pitted old Southwest, and it didn't even have to involve Arkansas? I don't think that would be the case with a trophy made by Jerry Jones, but not made by, but, you know, he made it. Sure, it happened.
Speaking of the Joneses, I heard something this morning, a couple of days back. The Texas A&M play-by-play man was on a radio show up here, and he said that Mike Elko had told his team this week, hey, if you love the Cowboys, you get to play in the Cowboys stadium, the team you always loved. And if you hate the Cowboys, you've got a chance to stick it to the Jones family one last time this weekend.
Yeah, no, that's how I led in my on our website today is the what to know about Texas A&M. Yeah. I led off with that quote. I thought it was hilarious. Who knows what the future is going to be as far as like the official Southwest Classic. I do think it was a cool concept that, yeah, once these teams joined the SEC now, it's just a little bit weird. But I like rivalry games where there's a trophy. I think that those are really good for the sport. It's just you wonder how this will look for Arkansas versus A&M. It does feel very AT&T Stadium trophy to me, though.
I like the AT&T Stadium experience. I've always felt like it gave a big game experience to Arkansas, whether they were playing A&M there, whether it was the Cotton Bowl game against Kansas State. So I am going to miss that going away. I understand why it's not going to be played in Arlington anymore, but it is a little bittersweet seeing that thing go away. And I know that I'm looking forward to going down there one last time this weekend to get that Arkansas A&M experience, because regardless of how the games have you know, the outcome of the games, they've always been entertaining, and it's always been a great time, great experience.
Students' favorite weekend of the whole year.
Well, because about half of them get to go home.
Yeah, true. And then the half of us that, you know, were raised in Fountain Lake, Arkansas, or wherever people were from, you know, it's a cool experience. You're going to the Cowboys Stadium.
Technically, I think it's about 30%.
Yeah, I don't even know the numbers. But, yeah, it is. It's just a cool – I know as whenever I was a student, I looked forward to just that experience. It just feels so big. I mean, being in the Cowboys Stadium, and you know, and it's also just really fun experiencing the A&M crowd and their whole. You can go way more in depth with their traditions than I could, but you know, their traditions that are nobody else understands. It was always kind of fun.
You know, you can't say whoop until you're a junior.
Couldn't have told you that they said whoop in the first place.
That's how they end their fight song. Everybody yells whoop.
Yeah, well.
Hullabaloo, baby.
Yeah, I will say it's probably, you know, sit over here and, you know, we all make fun of A&M and their traditions and how crazy weird
they
are.
But that's what college sports
are
all
about. But I'm like, you know, think about it. If I'm on A&M side, I think it's weird that a bunch of people from Hope, Arkansas wiggle their fingers in the air and say whoop big suey. You know what I mean?
I mean, as strange as the A&M traditions are, it actually is kind of cool, I feel like, just in terms of they have got their tradition base, and I mean they live those traditions. Yeah. And again that's what college sports
are.
I
love weird traditions. I mean, and I'm not gonna go back on my Eagle soapbox, but I loved the Eagle at Auburn. I mean, give me traditions that are unique, nobody else is doing it, and A&M has about 50 of those.
You know who's never lost at AT&T Stadium? Bobby Petrino. 4-0 as Arkansas's head coach there, be A&M three times, beat Kansas State in the Cotton Bowl there. Last year was the A&M offensive coordinator when they beat Arkansas. We're going to transition now to weekend predictions. We'll get to Arkansas A&M here at the end. First, we'll talk about a couple of non-conference games that I find kind of interesting this weekend. The first one, Ethan, is an undefeated matchup in the Big Ten, and it's 19th-ranked Illinois at number 9 Penn State. Brett Bielema, Barry Lunny Jr. in the group. They've got an undefeated team in Champaign. Do you think they can keep it going this week in Happy Valley?
I really enjoyed the Illinois-Nebraska game last week. I thought that was a very entertaining game, and I really want to pick Illinois. Sometimes with these picks, it's more about can I actually envision it in my head. I want to pick Illinois, but I just don't see them going into Penn State and winning in a night game like that. I'm gonna pick Penn State. They're heavy favorites, too.
They're an 18-point favorite. Penn State, James Franklin's called for a wide-out energy, whatever that means. I guess that means something big at Penn State. For this weekend's game against Illinois. I heard Brett Bielema on the Inside College Football TV show on CBS Sports Network the other day, and he was talking about the last time that these two teams met at Penn State. It was that 9 overtime game in 2021, and
that was like the first 2-point conversion fest, right? The real notable one.
The first real, and it's and Brett was saying, you know, it's still the longest college football game in history, and it's like, come on, man, like maybe the most overtime periods. That's not the longest college football game. I went and looked this up a couple of years ago when that game was played. When Penn State and Illinois played 9 overtimes, there were 37 total snaps in those 9 overtimes, because once you got to triple overtime, it was just it was like a soccer shootout. It was just 2-point conversion, 2-point conversion. And it seemed like nobody could make a 2-point conversion, if I remember the game correctly. When Arkansas played Kentucky in 03 and Ole Miss in 2001, those games had 78 and 74 snaps in the overtime period, so more than twice as long as the Penn State Illinois game. So, you know, let's cool it on the longest game ever talk. Big 12, Oklahoma State goes to Kansas State this weekend. The Cowboys lost to Utah last week. Ollie Gordon really not playing well for the Cowboys. And they go to a K-State team that got embarrassed last week against BYU. Wildcats are a 5-point home favorite.
I think there was so much energy that Oklahoma State had to do just to get up for that Utah game. That felt to me last week like almost the early just Big 12 play into the playoff game. Like, it's like whoever wins this has the inside track for that sets you up for the rest of the year. I think they probably expelled so much energy for that. And Kansas State, on the other hand, went to a place that they weren't really, they just didn't come ready. They had a total implosion near, I think, the end of the first half and never recovered. I think that Kansas State being at home, that might have been a wake-up call for them. I think Oklahoma State might have, you know, the hangover effect of that big game. I'm going to go with Kansas State.
I still think Kansas State's one of the best teams in the Big 12. I think right now there's probably a little bit of a – and I know what BYU did. You know, I think that they're in that conversation too. Right now, though, I think 1 and 2 seems to me like it's Utah and Iowa State, and then there's kind of everybody else. We'll see. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the season plays itself out. I think Kansas State wins. I think Kansas State's a lot better than what they showed last week in – Utah. We'll pivot to SEC games now. I won't pick this one straight up, but do you think LSU can cover a 22-point spread against South Alabama at night in Death Valley?
I did see that South Alabama just really beat App State bad, and I have a lot of respect for App State. I don't know if they're good. I shouldn't be comparing, you know, that score to come up with my LSU score, but I'm going to say LSU won't cover. I haven't been that impressed this year so far of just, like, they haven't once – they haven't yet made me just be like, oh, they handle business.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see it against South Alabama.
Major Applewhite leading South Alabama. They won 87-10 over Northwestern State a few weeks back. That's an FCS game. But they can score. They can score. I don't trust LSU to cover anything right now.
Yeah.
No. So I think South Alabama might make that a little bit closer than people think. Again, remember, LSU only beat UCLA by 17 last week at home. First SEC game, first conference game in the SEC for the number one ranked Texas Longhorns.
Texas.
They host Mississippi State. Can they cover 37.5 points?
Okay, good. I knew they're playing Mississippi State, and I'm not picking Mississippi State right now to do any. Like, of course I'm going to say they're going to cover,
because
why would I trust
cover
Mississippi State to not?
I don't know who Texas is going to play at quarterback. You know, they played Arch Manning last week, and then he played most of the game the week before due to an injury to Quinn Ewers. I don't really care who they have at quarterback. I watched Mississippi State's defense against Florida last week, and they made Graham Mertz look like Joe Burrow or something. I mean, that is a really, really, really bad defense.
Yeah, I think last I heard, Quinn Ewers, they're trying to get him back for the Red River rivalry against Oklahoma. So it's going to be Arch Manning this week, I think.
I did something that I get on to my son about all the time. I said, really, really, really. I tell him, you only need one really.
Because
he gives me about 20.
On this note, I was transcribing some Sam Pittman this morning, and it was him talking about Mike Elko's intelligence, and there were a lot of really, reallys in there. So I think it's funny you said that.
Oklahoma goes to Auburn. This game's going to be played opposite of Arkansas and A&M. The OU-Auburn game will be played on ABC. OU is a 2-point road favorite. Both of these teams have some big-time quarterback problems.
Yeah.
OU's going to start the freshman, Michael Hawkins.
I struggle picking this one because, on one hand, I think that what Hugh Freeze, how he's conducted himself after losses, there's a way to get like sometimes a wake-up call for your team that's going to get them to play better. I just see so much blame, like, just tearing guys down right now that I think that can mess up a locker room inside some. And I think Oklahoma, with their defense, that Auburn offense is not ready for that defense,
no,
I don't think.
Oklahoma, they got some thumpers on defense. Yeah. And I think Venables can really coach.
Yeah.
I think he'll have them up for this game maybe better than Hugh Freeze will have Auburn. Oklahoma, they got some questions on their offensive line. That's the only thing that really makes me hesitant to pick them. But I do know they got Branson Hickman back last week. I think they might be getting their right tackle back this week. You got to get those guys playing together. You got to get them practicing together. But if they can get those, I think they've got a good offensive line coach in Bill Bedenbaugh. So maybe he can get them together. I think OU can beat Auburn. I'm gonna pick OU on the road to beat the Tigers. Kentucky goes to Ole Miss. The Rebels are a 17.5 point favorite, and this is their SEC opener. Kentucky obviously has been Jekyll and Hyde. They lost to South Carolina big and then nearly beat Georgia.
Yeah, and I believe Kentucky, they played last week, but it was against like a MAC opponent or something.
Ohio.
So they might have had a, you know, both teams came off playing a lower level team, so they should, you know, not have expelled too much energy and should be healthy, I would think. I'm going to definitely go with Ole Miss. I just think it's going to be closer than – I don't think Ole Miss has challenged itself as much as Kentucky has to this point, and so I think it's going to be closer than people might expect, but I can't pick against Ole Miss with the talent they have on that team.
Kentucky's offense this year has had – let's count it here real quick – 12 and 9 – 21 offensive possessions. All that they've had are 6 field goals. They got to get better offensively, and that's in SEC play, by the way. 21 SEC possessions, 6 field goals is all that they have to show for it. I think Ole Miss wins. Kentucky, they're hard to figure out. I could see it being a really close game. I could see Ole Miss winning this thing by like 30, 40 points. I don't know which way it'll go, but Kentucky's offense, just really hard to pick them to do anything right now with the way they played against SEC teams. Game day will be there. Georgia goes to Alabama in the first time that these teams meet after Nick Saban retires. The Bulldogs are a 2-point favorite. It's the first time the Tide have been an underdog at home since 2007.
I struggled with this one. But Kirby Smart, after a bye week and after a wake-up call against Kentucky, I think at least probably a wake-up call for his team. That's the best thing in the world that could have happened to him is his team drop from being number one. He probably loves that. Yeah, I think Georgia goes in there. I've not been, Alabama's still Alabama, but the South Florida game raised some red flags for me. I think Georgia will win.
Yeah, I picked Georgia too, and it's because of Kirby Smart. We know what Kirby's going to be able to do in terms of getting his team up. We don't know what Kalen DeBoer's going to be able to do getting his team up for a big game like this. Like you said, both of them coming off of a bye week. I think Carson Beck is a potential first-round NFL draft pick, and he's got NFL draft picks playing in front of him. He's got NFL draft picks playing around him. And you put a quarterback in that type of environment, I know they struggled against Kentucky. I think their offense is a lot better than they showed against Kentucky. I think they're going to go to Alabama, and I think they're going to win that game. Before we go into Arkansas A&M real quick, there's a lot of talk around here that, and I don't know how, I think it may be a little bit unfounded, that game day could come to Fayetteville next year if Arkansas beat, or next week. Yeah, maybe next year too.
Yeah.
But they come to Arkansas next week if the Razorbacks were to beat Texas A&M, because Arkansas is receiving votes in the AP poll this week. A&M's number 24. So if Arkansas was to beat the Aggies, it wouldn't be surprising to see the Razorbacks ranked after that game. Tennessee, obviously, number 5. Here's where I would give people, I would have pause to say that. Every game day since Ireland has featured an SEC team. This week will be the 3rd consecutive week they're at an SEC campus. It'll be the 4th time in 5 weeks that they're at an SEC campus. And next week, you've also got that Michigan-Washington rematch from the national championship game.
Yeah, and Tennessee was a part of game day just
that's right, two weeks
before. So I think that they'll probably want to change it up. I think that whenever you have a rematch of the national championship game, I know it's not the Washington from last year, but I'd be surprised to see them not go with the national championship game rematch.
If there is a game in Fayetteville to get game day this year, I think it Arkansas would have to do some really great things before then, you know, be like a 2-loss team going into that point. Texas, if it's an 11 a.m. game on ESPN, I could see game day maybe, you know, making something out of that rivalry renewing. That's if Arkansas can do enough before then, and that's a big if, because they got a lot of really good teams in between now and then. Tennessee, Ole Miss, A&M this weekend, they're going to have to pick off some good teams to get to that point.
I can't wait to see what they do in Week 8, because a lot of it will probably depend on what happens Georgia-Alabama, but you have Georgia-Texas and Alabama-Tennessee in the same weekend. That's 4 of the top 5 teams playing.
You may be right. Where are those games?
In Texas.
Georgia-Texas.
And in Knoxville.
No question, Georgia-Texas gets that. All right, Arkansas A&M this weekend. The Aggies are a 4-point favorite. They are 11-1 against Arkansas since coming into the SEC, but we all know this series has been totally The ending's been a little bit predictable, but everything that ends up to the ending has been totally unpredictable. Some weird, weird things seem to happen in Jerry World.
You know, I wrestled with this one. I've said this already today, but it feels so much like last week's game to me of like, this is a game that historically, I've almost made like two rules to myself with picking games. Don't pick Vanderbilt ever. Just don't. Just don't. You're going to lose more than you win.
Don't pick against Saban.
That's
a rule for me.
Yeah, I'm about to say that. I should have learned that one SEC championship game last year. And then don't pick Arkansas in Arlington. Just don't. They're going to find a way to blow it somehow. But I think this is not your... This is a different Arkansas team, and I think that they are... I don't know. I think that winning on the road at Auburn, I'm a believer in momentum and confidence and what that can do for a group. I think going into that environment, people, I'm sure you could tell on the broadcast, like watching that game, but that environment was really hostile. And for them to win that game, and they wasn't pretty, but they won it. Meanwhile, A&M's coming off of a game where they just, I feel like, have more,
they look good.
They have more questions than answers right now. I think that it's coming at the right time, which I don't know how much we've said that about Arkansas A&M series in years past, that it's coming at the right time for Arkansas and wrong for A&M. Next week's game against Tennessee might be wrong time for Arkansas, but I think that this game just kind of sets up with, once again, who's the better quarterback, and I'm going to take Talen Green in this one with what he can do with his legs.
They look like mirror images to me, at least just based on the games they've had. They blew out an FCS team. They played a Power 4 team that they feel like they could have and should have beaten. They played a Group of 5 team at home when they were a 22.5-point favorite, and it was way closer than the home crowd would have liked to have been. And then they play one of the worst SEC teams in the conference, and they win on the road. You can say the same thing about Arkansas and Texas A&M, what I just mentioned. Mirror image teams just in terms of what's happened to this point in the season, and that's why they both have 3-1 records, 1-0. In the SEC. When it's this close, Ethan, I go to the efficiency ratings. I plugged in their numbers from their first SEC game and against Power 4 teams, and I said, that's what I'm going to pick. It gave me Arkansas. Gave me Arkansas 25-21 to beat Texas A&M. Texas A&M offensively has been a little bit less efficient than Arkansas. Defensively, Arkansas has been a little bit more efficient than Texas A&M, and that, I think, is what it comes down to. In a close game, special teams. I think Texas A&M's got a better kicking situation than Arkansas does, and so that's certainly something to watch. But the efficiency ratings say Arkansas, so that's what I'll take. Arkansas to beat Texas A&M, even though the head says you probably ought to pick the Aggies in Arlington.
I think this is the very definition of a toss-up. Just like, I mean, you can say all these ones that A&M's won in recent history with toss-ups, too, with how close they were. I think it's just another game in the series.
Arkansas, Texas A&M, 2:30 on Saturday. We'll both be in Arlington. Hope you'll come to WholeHogSports.com this weekend to read our coverage. And we'll be back on Monday for a recap of the Razorbacks and the Aggies. And we'll start to look forward to Arkansas's game against Tennessee the following weekend. We appreciate you being with us and hope to see you again Monday. Have a great weekend, everyone.